This is the Michael K. Show podcast.
I'm joyful and fun.
Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 2.
That's cool, man!
On 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
We love to talk to our next guest because he's not just a guest. He's a longtime friend, and that is our very own Stephen A. Smith. Stephen, it's Michael, Don, and Peter. How you doing?
What's going on, y'all? How y'all doing?
All hanging in. So, post-mortem on the finals, did Antetokounmpo answer all the doubters? And do you think he changed minds with some great players that, hey, you could actually have it happen organically rather than get together a super team?
Well, if he didn't, he should. He should have, because what he did, that was a sensational performance in the closeout game. And for me, I focus on the free throws, the 17 of 19 from the free throw line, nearly 90%. And the reason why, number one, is because of his perpetual struggles with free throw shooting. But more importantly, to be in attendance for these games, to see the humiliation, the tactics thrown in his direction, the ridicule, et cetera. And it never fazed him one bit, guys. I also had to cover the Philadelphia 76ers series against Atlanta in that second round. And I saw, as the series waned, how reticent Ben Simmons was to get the ball, to attack the basket, petrified, absolutely petrified of having to go to the free throw line because he had absolutely no confidence whatsoever. Easily that could have been the Greek Freak, but it wasn't. He didn't care. He didn't care about the cynicism. He didn't care about the ridicule. There was no hesitancy whatsoever in attacking the basket, going after it, forcing himself and Milwaukee to play downhill because they knew that Phoenix was just undersized and undermanned and would be limited in what they could do about it. And that's exactly what he did. So he deserves a lot of props for it. He's a worthy MVP. And then to stay in Milwaukee, to have no other quote-unquote bona fide recognized superstars as his teammates, and to be in this position, you just got to tip your cap to him and say, job well done.
Did everything change for Chris Paul as far as what's going to happen now with his contract from 2-0 to then losing four straight in the final?
I don't think so, because I think, first of all, I'd be surprised if he left. The reason why, Don, is that he's scheduled to make $44 million for this upcoming season. He has a player option. The intent was for him to opt out so he could get a 2 or 3 year deal at a minimum of 70, perhaps up to 100 million, 70 for 2 years, 100 million for 3 years. That was his goal. It still may be his goal. If there's any kind of reluctance whatsoever, it would be him electing not to opt out and to take the $44 million for this upcoming season. I don't think he'll do that. I think he'll opt out because I think Phoenix knows what they have in him. And I think because of that, I could see him opting out and then re-upping for anywhere from $65 to $75 million over 2 years or $100 million over 3 years with Phoenix. That was pretty much going to be the situation. You'd have to have a boatload of cap room a la the New York Knicks or somebody in order to be able to stomach his salary. The Lakers certainly can't do it. And I happen to know that he really, really wants to remain out west. So if it's not Phoenix, it's definitely L.A. where he has his wife and kids already living. That would be the goal. I'd be hard-pressed to believe, despite his relationship with Knicks president Leon Rose, that he would be willing to move to New York City. But then again, based on the numbers, you just never know.
All right. It's also interesting with the Lakers situation. Let's say he wants to go to L.A., right? There's no way he could get anywhere close to that money. Am I right?
Correct. That is absolutely correct. That's the whole issue. They would have to work out, they'd have to work out something because he's not going to be willing to take like a $40 million pay cut to go to play for the Los Angeles Lakers. I certainly don't see that happening. That's not who he is. And with Phoenix knocking on the door and being so close, they're not a team that's conceding. They're a one-hit wonder and that there's no way this could happen for them next year. They believe they could tweak some things, buffer up their front line, and they could be right back where they were just now.
Dame Lillard, I mean, there have been different reports. You know, he wants to get out. Then he had a press conference that he doesn't want to. You know, he hasn't made a decision yet. What are your people telling you in the phone calls you make and the conversations you have? Is Lillard going to remain in Portland, or is there a chance that he will force a trade?
Well, I've known Damian Lillard for years, so let me just give it to you straight. It's very, very difficult for him to say that he wants to leave Portland. He is frustrated with management, but nevertheless, he loves playing for the organization, loves being in the city of Portland, and for the most part really doesn't want to leave. However, if he were to decide to leave, although they have his rights because he's got about 4 years and $176 million left on his deal, he would want to come to the New York Knicks. Not the Lakers, not the Clippers, not Dallas, the New York Knicks, not Brooklyn. The New York Knicks would be his number one choice if he were to decide that he wanted out of Portland.
Why the Knicks?
I know this. The New York market, along with the fact that he believes that he would be able to get people to come and want to play with him. His problem is that nobody wants to come to the Pacific Northwest, really. He doesn't believe that would be the case in a New York Knicks uniform. His mentality, just how he's built, he's the kind of guy that he doesn't want to join a super team. He doesn't want to, you know, join forces. He doesn't mind being the one responsible for putting it together because that's entirely different if dudes wanted to come and play with him. But he's not the kind, he's not a follower, and he's not the kind of guy that wants to join KD and James Harden or LeBron and AD in L.A. or Kawhi and Paul George with the Clippers. He's not built like that. He wants to be that guy. If you want to come and play with him, fine. But he's not built like, oh, I want guys. I want to go and piggyback on other guys in order to be successful. It's just the way that he's built. It's his mentality. And he's never changed in all the years that I've known him.
Chris Paul.
Because I've been begging him to want to come to the New York Knicks and to demand a trade to the New York Knicks for years.
It would be amazing, theoretically. We know that Chris Paul, like, is a lovable guy in commercials and has his role in the Players Union and obviously has close friends, you know, that we all know about. But my question is, how is Chris Paul regarded on the court? Because throughout these playoffs, he kind of made clear again that he can be a special kind of dude on that court. I don't mean that in a good way, Stephen A. Is he not a great guy when it comes to Chris Paul on the court?
He is in a quiet taste, Peter. That's the best way to say it. The guy is a future Hall of Famer. He can really, really ball. But you know how we throw out the phrase, or we coin the phrase floor general, when we talk about point guard? That's truly who he is and who he believes himself to be. He runs the show, and he runs it with an iron fist. You are going to do things the right way, or you are going to hear from CP3. He's not going to shut up. He's not going to leave you alone. He's not going to bow down and defer. No, he truly views himself as a floor general. There is a right way to do things in order to be successful. And as a point guard, an extension of the coach, which he knows himself to be, he truly, truly embraces that concept wholeheartedly. So, there were the times, many times during the years, if you talk to folks that cover the Phoenix Suns, DeAndre Ayton wasn't even in the huddle listening to Monty Williams. While Monty Williams was addressing the rest of the team, it was CP3 that had him on the side coaching him. It was CP3 that had Devin Booker at his house watching game film. It was CP3 that refused to go back home during the postseason when there were days off to see his family because he would summon all of the young guys to his home to watch tapes about the do's and don'ts and what they needed to do in order to be better so the team could be more successful. He truly, truly embraces that concept. This team was young enough where they really, really embraced it and all of this other stuff. They really, really embraced it. And they did things that way. But the point is that even though they did things that way because they were young, more veteran teams might not be as receptive to listening to that all the time, which is why when he arrived in Houston, they were favorites with him and James Harden, or not to Golden State, of course, but with everybody else. It was destined that they would meet in the conference finals. But a year or so later, James Harden wanted him gone. He didn't want him in Houston because CP3 can wear on you. because he's committed. They know he is. Everybody respects him, but not everybody likes him.
Well, I thought, Stephen, one thing that stood out to me was when Patrick Beverley shoved him in the back about as hard as I've ever seen someone shoved in a basketball game, and people seemed, like, upset, but I didn't see people trying to scrap for him the way the Penguins would be defending Sidney Crosby if he got shoved in the back. Do you know what I mean?
That's true, but the flip side to it is that in the NHL, you know, you might be able to get away with it a little bit more than in the NBA. You can get ejected for shoving a dude.
Right.
Just shoving him. And I'm not talking about the Patrick Beverley shove. I mean, if somebody had come and shoved Patrick Beverley back, they would have
been
ejected from the game too.
Right.
So you're mindful of all of that in the NBA because things are addressed so tightly when it comes to the potential of any kind of violence. And so as a result of that, you know, that's what you might have seen. But everybody knew. I mean, I've known Patrick Beverley for years, loved the guy. But he was completely off base there. Everybody knew how wrong he was, and everybody knew that you don't do what he did, not to mention the fact that the Clippers were talking an awful lot of smack during that series. And then CP3 rolls out to L.A. in Game 6, drops 41 or so in a closeout game, and called Patrick Beverley the B-word as he was walking by him, which is why Patrick Beverley reacted the way that he did.
Now, did you see how that analogy flowed, Peter, now that he's been hanging out with P.K. Subban doing hockey stuff?
You know what?
You see that?
So true. The man knows hockey now.
Let's do that hockey.
All right, so the early odds came out, I believe it was yesterday, Stephen A., and it's kind of funny because it's free agency hasn't even started, the draft, whatever, and they have the Brooklyn Nets 1 and the Lakers 2 to be in the finals. Is that the way you see it and prognosticate it before any moves?
Brooklyn and L.A.?
Yeah.
I see it, assuming Anthony Davis is healthy. Now, I created a stir because I've been on the record stating that I would strongly consider trading Anthony Davis for Damian Lillard. And people are like, are you crazy? And I'm like, well, wait a minute. And Anthony Davis, just this past season, missed as many games as Damian Lillard missed his entire career. And so the first ability is availability. And Damian Lillard is religiously available. Secondly, it's a guard-oriented perimeter-style game that's being played. That clearly is in Damian Lillard's favor. Thirdly, he's an elite, if not the most elite closer in the modern era. There's no one in modern NBA history that has hit more game-winning shots than Damian Lillard. So all of those things I take into consideration combined with what LeBron brings to the table, and all of a sudden I'm saying, is it really that far-fetched to imagine that that's something that should be considered? I don't think so, man. In an ideal world, you get LeBron, you keep LeBron, rather, you keep AD, and you get Damian Lillard via a trade. I think that's pretty much close to zero of a possibility of happening. But I just threw that out there to say, if I'm Portland and I'm the Lakers, is that a trade scenario I would entertain? You're damn right I would.
What about Ben?
What are the Knicks going to do, Stephen A.? I mean, who are they getting?
It's hard to say. They've been talking about Colin Sexton. They've been talking about Kyle Lowry on a one-year, $30 million deal, something along those lines, because if you've got somebody that's experienced and is a shot maker at the point guard spot, that could do some things for you. But as far as I'm concerned, unless there was a deal out there that enabled you to acquire a Damian Lillard, I don't see the Knicks being any different than they were this year. They overachieved without question. They've proven themselves to be respectable. They're hard-nosed. They'll defend. They'll fight. But clearly, we all recognize during the series against Atlanta, they don't have neither a number one nor even a number two option. Julius Randle, regardless of his 24 points per game, is a number three option. You cannot be a top two option when you're not even ambidextrous. You can't even use both hands. You just can't do it. I mean, I don't know how many times I screamed at him and RJ, go, you know, you do have a right hand. You can use it. It's not illegal to use your right hand. Left, left, left. Everybody is screaming. They're going left. They're going left. Come postseason time, that's not going to make any noise for you. They need a big-time number two option or obviously a number one option in order for us to change what we're probably thinking about the New York Knicks right now. They're good enough to challenge for one of the bottom four spots in the Eastern Conference, even though they were a top four this year. And they'd go home in the first round based on how they're constructed.
Is there Is there an actual market for Ben Simmons? What do you do if you're Philly with this guy?
Well, first of all, I think there is a market for him. I mean, I got to tell you, you know, shooting is very, very important, and he can't do that. But there's nothing else he can't do, guys. He's an elite defender. He was my defensive player of the year. He's got a high basketball IQ. He can handle the basketball. He can pass the basketball. He can create shots for other people, and he can defend. So when you look at it from that perspective, that's a big-time prospect there. Now, in Philadelphia, it may not work, but what if he were in Golden State? What if he was on the L.A. Clippers? What if he was on a team like that? Let's not act like we don't know that this dude is a big-time talent. The problem is he can't shoot and has never worked in the shooting game in the 4 years that he's been in the NBA. That's his problem. If he could so much as shoot free throws, he would be a 22-point-per-game scorer. Think about that for a second here. We all know he can't shoot a jumper to save his damn life. He's attempted about 5 3-point shots in his entire career, 4 or 5. And I'm here telling y'all right now that without a jump shot at all, he could still average 22 a game on better than 50% shooting if he could just hit free throws. Think about that. That's an elite player. And so we can't ignore that, and we can't ignore the specter of him landing on the right team. If you're Golden State and you said, here's 18-point-per-game scorer Andrew Wiggins, plus we'll give you both our first-round picks, which is 7 and 14 this year, if I remember correctly. We'll give you a first-round pick next year. Give us Ben Simmons. Put Ben Simmons with a healthy Klay Thompson and Steph Curry and a James Wiseman and a Draymond Green. And what do you got? I tell you, you have a champion. Or at least a team that makes it to the finals. That's what I tell you.
Now, I've read stories, Stephen. I was talking with Stephen A. Smith here on the Michael Kay Show, that Kawhi might not play next year because of the surgery. Is that true? And if he does play, is he definitely coming back to the Clips?
I haven't heard that he wouldn't play, Mike, but I will tell you this. Kawhi Leonard is a problem for the National Basketball Association. That's why they're smiling ear to ear today that Giannis Antetokounmpo is an NBA champion. If as much as I rooted for Brooklyn, because I rooted for them against anybody but the New York Knicks, because I'm a native New Yorker and that's just the way I am, The bottom line is that it would have been bad for the NBA if Brooklyn had won because of how James Harden forced himself out of Houston, how Kyrie Irving took time off whenever the hell he wanted to, okay? And prior to that, you know, basically completely supported the hiring of Steve Nash by saying, quote, "We don't really need a coach." That's what he said. So if you're the NBA and you're thinking about those components and that equates to a champion, that's not good. Well, the same is applicable to Kawhi Leonard. Kawhi Leonard comes to the Clippers. Well, how does he get to the Clippers? He basically blackmails them by saying, okay, I probably don't need Toronto, but the Lakers want me. And if you don't sign me and mortgage the farm to get Paul George here with me, I'm going to sign with the Lakers. And I'm going to join Anthony Davis and LeBron James. So you got there to the Clippers in that fashion. Then when you got there, you practiced when you wanted. You played when you wanted. You rested when you wanted. You chilled when you wanted. So when stuff like that is happening, that's not necessarily the greatest thing. Now you're the Clippers, you might not want to sign them to a long-term deal because you see those habits coupled with the lack of reliability. But the flip side is, he is a top five, arguably a top three talent in the NBA. He's a sensational player. You know that if he were healthy, it would have been the Clippers in the finals instead of the Phoenix Suns. They would have beat Phoenix. They might have won the championship. That's how good Kawhi Leonard is. And we saw his success 2 years ago where they were down 0-2 in Toronto and Nick Nurse comes in there to make adjustments and Kawhi Leonard looks at Nick Nurse and the whole team and says, the adjustment is I'll start guarding Giannis. And he guarded Giannis and Milwaukee lost 4 straight to Toronto. That's how Toronto ultimately ended up winning the championship. So that Kawhi Leonard, as great as he is, as impactful as he is, you don't want to sign him to a long-term deal because he does things so differently, but you would sign him to a 1-year deal to keep him there unless, of course, you got to compete with Dallas, who might want him and should be willing to give up Kristaps Porzingis, a former Knick, in order to get him, because his relationship with Luka Doncic in Dallas isn't the most ideal relationship that they have.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All right, before we let you go, I think it's a fascinating point, and the NBA could be concerned about it, but, you know, because we're here in New York, you know, Kyrie just left at times. He just left. How does the NBA stop that? Is there any way to stop it, Stephen A?
I don't think with this present collective bargaining agreement. I think that it can only be stopped during collective bargaining negotiations where the owners draw a hard line in the sand. In order for these guys to start prioritizing the regular season a bit more. The fact of the matter is, when you got guys engaging in load management, please understand what that is about. It's not just guys who are hurt that are trying to get healthy. It's guys who are perfectly healthy, but they call it preventative measures. To avoid getting hurt, they don't show up to games, and they pick and choose what games they ain't showing up to. Now, the NBA made some inroads as it pertains to guys doing that for nationally televised games. That's fair enough. But last time I checked, the local markets matter. And so something has to be done because, again, one time Kyrie took off, it was because of the birth of his kid, and we all respect that. There were a couple of other times he took off. The Brooklyn Nets didn't even know why. He just said, I needed a break. Now, this guy didn't play from February or March. Didn't play during the bubble. The season resumed in December. And this dude took off after the first month of the season. Talk about he needed a break when he had 9 months off previously. You got to be kidding me. That's not something that could be tolerated. He is box office. He is an electrifying talent. As far as I'm concerned, you walk through the turnstile to see Kyrie Irving put on the show that he's capable of putting on because he's that special. But he's temperamental. He alienates folks. He's got attitude all the time. He looks at the media as peons, as he's highlighted, literally, in quotes, publicly. And he acts that way periodically at his choosing. That doesn't make him a bad guy. He does a lot of great, great things off the court, makes a lot of contributions to a lot of different causes. Heart is in the right place. He's not a bad guy. But because of that temperament, it is a simple fact. Sometimes he wants to show up to work, and sometimes he doesn't. And during the regular season, not during the postseason, but during the regular season, when Kyrie Irving doesn't want to show up to work, he don't show up to work.
Now,
something's got to be done about that.
I'm fascinated by this, and I know that what your answer is going to be, I don't care. But you've got a big voice in the NBA and on ESPN. When you say stuff like this, do you hear from these guys or these guys' people that, hey, don't be talking about Kyrie and Kawhi like that?
All the time. And family members.
Really?
Let me say that. And let me say that, too. And a lot of times, when you hear relationships and, you know, somebody's not talking to me or whatever the case may be, that's the reason why. Listen, let me be very, very clear. I don't want any enemies. I'm not trying to make enemies or whatever, but I'm not walking around here with blinders on, and I'm not accountable to NBA players, NBA coaches, NBA executives, NBA owners. I'm accountable to the viewing public. It's my job to call it like I see it. And when I see it, I'm going to call it. That's the way it's going to be. That's the way it's going to stay. I could give less than a damn how anybody feels about that. If I'm wrong, I'll say I'm wrong. Most of the time when it comes to the NBA, I'm right on the money. And that's just the way that it is. I don't enjoy saying this, but the facts are the facts. And when these kind of things happen, Michael Kay and Don LaGreca and Peter Rosenberg and others, y'all are talking about this. How the hell are you going to air and talk about it but I have an excuse not to when I cover the damn league.
Right.
That makes no sense. It's my job. It's my responsibility. I don't have Thanksgiving dinner with these folks. I don't exchange Christmas gifts. I'm not trying to make enemies, but I'm going to do my job. And if that comes with making enemies, so be it.
I'll tell you what, Stephen, if you are ever at a loss for Thanksgiving dinner, you come over to me and Jody's house and we'll have you there. We'd love to have you there.
Well, you guys have seen some of my family members. You know I'm the youngest of six. And you know the last thing I ever have to concern myself with is having a home-cooked meal.
Beautiful.
So I appreciate nice. The gesture, but there are no shortages of home-cooked meals coming my way.
Beautiful stuff. Great stuff, Stephen. Thanks for coming on.
My pleasure. Y'all take care.
Take care, man.
That was great. You know, because when he says that stuff, that resonates. People hear that stuff.
I was thinking that.
We said that about Kyrie all the time, and he says it in the right way. Kyrie does a lot of wonderful things. Peter, you've said this as well. But you just can't, like, show up at work whenever you want to show up at work, especially when you're getting paid that much money. I think that if you – here's the way I think you'd stop it, because money's pretty important. If you just feel like it's time, I've got to step away and not play these games, and I'm not hurt, you're not going to get paid. You lose 1/82nd of your contract. And when you get paid $45 million, right, that's a lot of money.
I think Kyrie's he's to me one of the biggest challenges in terms of talking about an athlete, because phenomenal player, good heart, does good things, and sometimes he does things you're just like, what? Right. So the problem is we've now gotten to a place where when you call the guy out for the things he does that are the what, it makes people think that you're saying he's a bad guy and you don't like him and you're against him, and that's just not true. But listen, Stephen A., he's managed to do this for a very, very long time, and I truly admire, I really do, I truly admire how thick Stephen A.'s skin is about all this stuff.
Because he's got to walk into arenas, and these guys get in his grill. He doesn't care.
Well, he's got a job to do. And if he is going to be under the thumb of the players, then he can't do his job. And he'll have all these players that are friendly with him, and then he wouldn't be Stephen A. Smith.
Right. Right.
So he made a conscious decision.
Stephen A. really burns you, though, on your Thanksgiving offer. Just no.
Yeah, he really did.
All.
I didn't want no
part of
it.
He was just like, don't worry about me. I got family. I'm good.
I'm good, too. We'll be back in just a moment right here on Yes at 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoons starting at 2 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.